Hey, everybody, and welcome to the GrayscaleGorilla.com podcast. In today's episode, we talk about how to start to charge for your work. How do you decide how much to charge? What's your day rate? What's your project rate? We also go into some of the other things to think about when you start to get paid as a motion designer. We go through our experience and really try to give you some tips on how to price yourself and some other things to keep in mind as you move forward in your career. Now, before we get to today's episode, I wanted to remind you of a big sale that we have coming up. It's December 6th, and we're having 40% off the entire Grayscale Gorilla store. Everything that Grayscale Gorilla makes, including all of our software and all of our training, is going to be 40% off. We rarely have sales this large, and that's why I'm here on the podcast to remind you guys, put it on your calendar, December 6th, 40% off everything that Grayscale Gorilla makes, and that includes our training site, which is new this year. So head on over there, check out what you have, what you're interested in, and if you have any questions, don't forget to let us know, and I hope you take advantage of our 40% off sale. Okay, with that, let's head on in and let's start the podcast. Hey guys, welcome back to the podcast. We got Chris here. What's up, man?
Hello, hello.
And Chad Ashley.
Hi.
This is what I sound like. How do you do that in a podcast? You have to say like, "Hi, I'm Nick. This is my voice and how I sound."
And then I was going to do a fake voice and see if people that don't have the video would be able to tell it was me.
It just sounded like Chad, but a little frustrated.
I could also do a good Kermit the Frog, I've been told. So,
why are there so many
songs about rainbows?
Wow, you guys are both pretty good. Hey, I don't think people are going to be able to tell it was two different people.
If we just talk like Kermit the whole time, I don't think anybody will notice.
I'll just do Ray Romano.
Instantly, the views just plummet, and everything just goes down.
Or it's the most highly viewed, and then we're just confused from that point forward.
Yeah, I checked out that podcast you recommended about 3D and Cinema 4D and all that stuff, and they started doing Muppet impressions, so I left.
Yeah, enough of that.
So how are you guys? If you're listening this later, it is Cyber Monday today. Are you guys taking advantage of any deals? You got Black Friday, Cyber Monday stuff? Anything big going on?
Is that like an across-the-board type of thing? Because Chad's been recommending a particular video card to me. Like, I guess if a website has like a 10% off, that'd be a good chance to buy it.
You may want to check it out. There's deals and steals happening.
There's lots of deals going on. I kind of, last year, I think I nerded out on it more than I did this year. And I didn't actually even buy anything this year. But I'm fascinated at like what people discount, how they discount it and stuff. And mostly because it gives me an excuse to buy something. And I think I'm one of those people that loves to have Amazon packages show up in the mail.
Oh, that's always
so
fun.
So I don't know. I might buy some stuff, maybe some socks.
I guess that's all I ever do. Like, if there's something I was already planning on buying, it's maybe a good, like, I'll wait a week because Cyber Monday's coming. But besides that, like, I'm philosophically against Black Friday.
Like, really?
I don't like the idea of it.
Yeah, I am too, because, you know, it's just, it kind of shows you what's everything that's ugly in the world.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And I actually went to Home Depot just to get something, and I completely forgot what day it was, and it was the day after Black Friday, so it was Saturday. And I was like, what the hell's going on? Like, why is everybody here? Why are they so pushy? Everybody was kind of mean. And I was just like, what? Oh, yeah, that's right. It's Black Friday weekend. I probably shouldn't be in any store.
Yeah.
Yeah, ugh. Definitely like staying home for that stuff. I saw a couple deals on some cameras. I've been looking at upgrading my, in a past life, I was a photographer. So I've had like the same camera gear, same full frame Nikon since 2008. And it's an amazing camera. I've shot thousands of photos on it. It's a beautiful, but it has zero video capabilities. So I bring this giant lens and this awesome full body frame thing. And all my friends are like, oh, sweet. Is it a 1080p? I'm like, this doesn't even shoot video at all. Like,
wow.
The coolest thing could happen right now. And I got to pull out my iPhone to capture it on video. So I've been looking at some of the deals that Amazon has on some Nikon gear and Canon gear. So it's kind of weird. I'm Nikon at home and then Canon at the office. And it's not the most efficient thing.
Yeah.
But we just shoot a lot more video here for our podcast. I obviously Canon's killing it in that regard. So I've been looking at those deals. Nothing really else.
I really want to buy that Google Pixel, but I just haven't been able to make myself pull the trigger yet. And I don't know. We'll see what happens. I'm kind of like torn on that. I thought about buying a new camera too, actually. I was looking at the Sony, one of those new Sony cameras.
All those new Sonys are amazing.
Yeah, they're pretty nice.
A camera is that like a really fancy digital camera is a thing that I always think would be great to have. But if, for me, it would be like I'm going to use it for like 5 hours a year.
I know.
But
I
feel, love the idea of it, but I've resisted this far.
I know. And really, when, you know, you got the family and stuff, and it's like you want to like, oh, let's bring the nice camera. And then you're like, oh, but then I got to put it in a case and I got to carry it around. And I got to make sure it's got the card. And it's just easier to bring out my
the
phone.
Beach, it's going to get messed up.
Yeah,
like,
dude.
Yeah.
It's like the phone.
Check out those Sonys. Check out the Sonys with the lenses built in, too, if you're worried about size. They are amazing in low light. A good fan. Like, that's what I recommend for family stuff. Or the Canon GX7, I think it's called. That's a handheld little pocket camera, but it's got a bigger sensor on it. Great video, great low light, and like, you know, $500, $700, something like that. It's really, really reasonable for the quality on that, dude.
Let's open it up to the peoples. If you have if you have a recommendation, camera gear that is not going to weigh me down, hit me in the comments.
Yeah, maybe we can do a follow-up podcast about more specifically about cameras.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. Before we get to the main topic, too, if anybody has any recommendations or want any to give us any feedback about this podcast, this is on YouTube, which you may be watching right now, but we're also on iTunes. So if you want to do yard work, shovel snow, depending on where you live in the country, and also listen to all this craziness, you can go to iTunes. You could subscribe on any kind of podcast catcher, should have our show, and go review us too, will you? Good or bad, you know, we want to see some feedback over there, and it helps iTunes know that people are actually listening to us, so that would be helpful.
There are humans out there listening.
Yeah, and drop your camera gear in too, because I used to be up on all the new gear and what it all did, but I'm so behind, so
It's hard to stay up on that stuff.
Yeah, it's a lot,
and it's expensive. Which brings us to our topic.
I've got a good transition for us here.
Okay, go
so
for it.
So here we are. You know, you want to buy your nice cameras, and you got all your Cyber Monday deals. But you know, how are you going to buy all that stuff if you haven't gotten paid?
That's right.
And there we are.
That's and so we're talking about getting paid today, folks. If you're like a lot of artists getting into all this stuff, you may have gone through that transition of learning and playing and having fun with Cinema 4D and learning all these tools. And at a certain point, you're going to go, I want to do this for a living. How in the heck can I take all these skills I've been trying to, you know, do and actually go get paid for it? And it's something we've always talked about here at Grayscale Gorilla, all the way back to our early live shows where I'd hop on and answer questions from people that want to be freelancers or want to get their first job, you know, and, I think that stuff is as important as the software and the hardware when it comes to getting a job in this industry. Obviously, you got to know what you're doing. You got to be a good designer. You got to know the hardware and the software. But at a certain part, you have to stand up and say, I'm going to get paid for my skills and be able to follow through with it and go through all that stuff. And recently, there was a link that I actually posted on the blog quite a long time ago, but it recently surfaced again. Kind of reposted it on Twitter.
Gotta cut you off, Nick.
Oh, we're back. Sorry about that, folks. I had a little bit of a noise issue. I think I sounded like a robot there for a second. But what were we talking about? We're talking about getting paid. Recently on the blog, we reposted on Twitter and on our Facebook page, reposted an old post I put up quite a few years ago from Mike Montero, and it was a Creative Mornings talk that he gave called F You Pay Me. Only it wasn't F you, it was the other words. And it's an amazing talk. Every time I rewatch it, I feel like I learned something new. You ever read a book like that where 3 years later you watch it and you see it from a, you know, 3 years older eyes and have a different way of seeing it? Mm-hmm. This talk, if you haven't seen it, be sure to hit up the show notes and check it out. It's an amazing talk about the payment side of this industry. You know, he's a designer. He does more traditional design, but he is really strict about understanding you know, contracts and how much you charge and going after the people that say they're going to pay you and end up not paying you. So there's a lot of this going on in our industry, and I think it's something, you know, that everybody should learn more about, but also maybe something we could have a little conversation about here as well. I know this popped up, Chad, for you. Is this the first time that you've seen this one?
Yeah, I saw it a while back, and I think I found it independently from where you, when you had posted it a while back, and then I kind of watched it, and I was like, whoa, yeah, this is crazy. And then I started talking to people that I know in the industry, freelancers, small companies, and talking about payment terms and, you know, the whole, what do they call that, 30-day, help me out here.
Like net 30 kind
yeah,
of
net 30, net 60, net 90, all that stuff versus, you know, contracts, all that sort of thing. And I was shocked, just completely shocked at how many people I know that have not been paid on time or not paid at all.
At all.
Several times in their career with absolutely nowhere to turn. Mm-hmm. Nowhere to go. I mean, there's no, a lot of times when you're a freelancer, if you're working from home or whatnot, or even if you go to a studio as a freelancer, you're kind of, if you don't have a contract, you're kind of working on goodwill. You're hoping that they will pay you. You're hoping that everybody yep. shook hands and everything's going to work out. But the reality of it is that sometimes that doesn't happen. And what, I mean, dude, there's nowhere. I was just, I was angered and shocked that, that so many people had to go through this. And the only means of getting paid was to write increasingly more threatening emails or phone calls. Or, and then eventually, if you really go super far and you want to actually sue them, then you're out money for the lawyer and right. that whole process. And it's just, it's terrible. I mean, every other industry, can you imagine? I want everybody to imagine for a second. Let's say that, I don't know, you're doing work, you're having work done on your house. Maybe you're putting in an extension or on your house, or maybe you're upgrading your kitchen or whatever you're doing. And you tell the people, the contractors, that number one, you're not them until the work is completely finished, and even then you're not going to pay them until maybe 30 or 60 days after, and it's all done, and it, and we're not signing any, it's all through a handshake, like that's all that in, and that's the only insurance that you have. They would not touch your project. They would not come near you.
Yeah, there's there's so many other jobs we could look at and say, all right, people are going to show up just for a fee to go look at the project, right?
Right? Yeah,
they're going to show up and charge. And I am sympathetic, you know, just to make sure we're clear that creative industries are much more competitive. It's a much different landscape than those industries. I do like the comparisons to make it feel like it's real work, but I also do understand, like, a lot of creative people, I think, get into this, and this is something I always want to try to clarify. I think creative people get into this stuff not necessarily to go make the money, but to have fun and go make stuff and do this for a living. Like they like the do this for the living part, but not the actual business side of things. And it's something mm-hmm. I think we should talk more about. It's stuff I used to talk more about, and it is a much different landscape for creative people, because they're almost like not even not interested in it. It's almost like they're allergic to the idea of, like, well, you know, you pay me whenever, or especially early on, you have this idea that, oh, they're going to hire me at all. That's all I need. Like, they yeah, right. validated me. I'm going to go work for them. I'm going to trust them. And I've done it too. I've just lucked out that I've never gotten screwed on payment. I've been paid late, but I've never had to, like, go back and double ask, you know, five times.
I have been screwed.
You've had zero payment
I've
on
had
the end
zero.
Of a project.
I have a client right now who has not paid me.
Wow. That's nuts. And yeah. So no contract, right?
Mm-mm, nope.
Handshake, you're like, yeah, we're tight. Or did you have a previous relationship as far as, like, trusting them?
Just the people that worked there, not the company itself.
So this is exactly what this video talks about, is it's kind of like, no matter what, you should always have this idea of a contract, because a contract is never really there if everything goes well. a contract is just there if everything, if something goes wrong, what do you do? And even even sometimes in a good way, if something goes wrong, not always necessarily like what if they don't pay me, but what if the scope of the project changes and they all of a sudden want this giant, crazy, rotoscoped idea, something they came up with that morning that everyone's on board for, but now what? Like now you have to renegotiate everything because it is written down in contract. It's
well, that's where it can get super messy too, because maybe that part goes unspoken where it's like, oh, we already agreed on payment, but like they're expanding it. So like at the end of the project, maybe I'll tell them like, oh, it's a little more expensive, but then they're angry because they weren't told that the money changed. Like everybody can get screwed there.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing that like, I definitely, when you're working at a studio and you have like a producer, and it's kind of like if you worked at a studio and you're dealing with like an ad agency or like a film production company, that producer kind of acts as your real-time buffer for those types of things. But as an individual artist or a freelancer, you don't have that. You have to become that yourself, and you have to say, okay, wow, they just completely changed the scope of this project. It's time to have a conversation with them about scope creep and like, what are we going to do about these overages? And negotiating that into the fees and whatnot. I know a lot of people are afraid to do that because they're afraid that the job might get pulled if it's early in the project, or they might feel like they might get beat up on the price because we don't have the budget and we really want to do these things. Can you help us? And you feel bad. You want to be helpful. You want to be the person that saves the day, not the person that ends up wanting to charge them all this money.
Or you could just be socially awkward and not want to like have to bring up the horrible topic of money again.
Right. Yeah. And so my advice is to everyone is to develop that, you know, whether you have to develop this alternate personality to make it work or whatever you need to do, develop the personality that you call up when you need to talk money, because that, not that you need to be a jerk, not that you need to be, you know, standoffish or anything like that, but if you don't protect your process and value what you do and assign a dollar amount to what you bring to the table, then it's their job to get what they want at the quality they want for the lowest price.
And if you don't stand for it, they if you don't make the rules, they will.
Absolutely. And if you have to find that balance, because that's the best part. I mean, every successful artist, freelancer, company, whatever, that has reoccurring clients knows this game. It's the game of balance. You're balancing, am I going to get, number one, am I going to fight for overages on this scope creep? Because I really think it's significant and I'm going to need that money to cover this part of the job. Or is this a client that I think is going to be returning over the next 10 years and I'm just going to go ahead and eat that cost because I know they're going to come back again and again and again. So you have to ask yourself, it's this crazy like checks and balances type of thing. You have to kind of maneuver each client differently.
I'll start, I have a lot to say about this. I'll try to keep it concise, but the first thing you have to realize is there's work you do for free and there's work you do to get paid. And don't do half and half. If you're going to do a job and because of the experience, because of the people you're working with, because of the exposure, sometimes there is exposure. There's a lot of jokes about exposure, but sometimes you do the job because you want to work with these people, you want to learn from this or whatever. If that's the case, then try to do it as free as possible so you don't run into any of these problems and just say it's free and also it's going to be more in line with what I want to do, right? So when it's free, you actually get more power on the creative side of things to make it the project that you want, to make an incredible piece for your reel, to do all that stuff. As soon as you get paid for something, it is up to them to direct you what they want, right? In some cases, they want you to come up with it. Some perfect projects, you're the full creative on it. But in so many ways, you're now beholden to what they want, and you have to budget for that. Mm-hmm. So, and you have to say, okay, if we're going to do it the way you want, we're going to get paid for this.
Yeah,
and
there was because you lose your leverage if you don't. If you're doing a free job, and the second you say, okay, now this is a paid job, all your creative leverage, well, probably will go out the window, because right. now it used to be like, well, we're getting this cool artist to do this work for free. Let's just let him, I'm just happy that he's doing it. Let's just let him do his thing or her thing. And the second you're like, no, I want to be paid, then they're going to be like, oh, now we can control some of this.
Well, which is potentially fine. But I think what Nick is saying is that, and you can do that and you can give up that freedom, but you don't want to hit that halfway point where you're like, you know what? I'll do this for half off because you've lost all the freedom and you're getting half the money.
That would be terrible.
Right. And even $1 shifts the power, because free gives you 100% power and $1 gives them almost all of it back. You know, it's such, so if $1 is going to tip the scale, you might as well charge what you're worth at that point, because it ultimately is going to be up to them or their client or whatever. There's this great, I'll have to find it, but it's a designer saying, hey, you need a logo? I'll make it for free if it's exactly what I want.
Yeah.
I'll do it for $100 if you just tell me roughly what you want and then you get whatever I get. I'll do it for $1,000. Like, the scale goes up. The more input that the client has, the more, like, he adds another zero to the price. And it's a little bit tongue-in-cheek, but I think it speaks a lot to the power of making something for yourself that has, you know, that has the potential to be seen or to be able to work with somebody. Dude, go do those projects. Go do them for free. Like, that's fine. A lot of people will tell you don't do anything for free. If you're new, if you're brand new and looking to expand your reel and all this stuff,
Chad just looked horrified.
I still do stuff for free because it's stuff that I want to do. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
And I think that's great. And I'm totally agreeing with everything you're saying. I think that I thought it was funny to me when you mentioned that graph, or that article or whatever it was, I think I had read that too. But it's so funny how that's exactly how, if you're at a studio, how you could literally chart the artist's interest in a project based on how much feedback or direction they get. Right. So they super enjoy the project if it's more autonomous, and like you said, you're able to invest more of your own creative vision into it. The second you start getting more nitpicky directors or agency people or producers or whatever, the second that interest level starts to drop from the artist.
I've been there.
And yeah, that's kind of, you know, that's why I think it's really important, if you work at a studio, that maybe you feel beat down by direction and whatnot, or your individual freelancer, individual artist working for clients that are beating you down, but they're paying you. It's important to do free jobs, and I don't want to say even free jobs. I want to say passion projects, because passion projects recharge you mentally, creatively, so that you're not going down this continuous path where you're getting paid really well, but your creative mind is just deteriorating because you're just getting beat down. So yeah, I was just kind of agreeing with you and saying that passion projects is the answer if you're caught in that trap.
Yeah, there's always going to be work. You know, if you're getting paid for this stuff. Now, I always assume there's a lot of people that are into Cinema 4D and all this stuff just to have fun with it, play, make a new daily render and have fun. But there's an entirely different group of people that decide to go, I'm going to go get paid and do this stuff. And if you do that, these skills are some of the hardest things to learn, like how to learn how to price yourself. Nobody teaches that. And it's so hard to even talk to as well, like, because you can't give a hard number, because it depends on how good you are, how well known you are, how you're
where
you live, right? Yeah. Like who your clients are, what kind of work you like doing. And
what's
so,
your competition like?
Yeah, exactly. So it's a really difficult thing to figure out. But I think early on, if you are interested in this, or maybe you're looking to maybe you work full time and you're looking to become freelance, there's that angle too, where you've seen it. I would go start learning the business side of things as early as possible if that's your end goal. If you're working full time, you can actually go talk to the producers and the people in charge of this stuff and ask them, like, how do they deal with this stuff? I remember Colin Davis, who I worked with at Digital Kitchen, who taught me a lot of stuff when I went freelance and started, you know, charging a few, you know, for a couple projects. Mostly it was my iPhone stuff. It wasn't even, 3D, but it was still the same thing. Like, how do I charge and how do I add in overages? And he had a lot of great ways of thinking about it. So I would go talk to those kind of people and learn the language of business, which is really what this is. This is all the non-fun stuff, but you have to know it to be able to do this and for a living. And I don't know, maybe we have some tips for people to kind of like start to learn these skills.
Well, I'll tell you what I learned when I had that client that didn't pay me and still hasn't paid me, is I learned I am never doing work on goodwill again.
Not the company, but the
I will never take a job without some sort of written agreement on payment terms and something that I can refer back to on like when I'm going to get paid, how I'm going to get paid, all that sort of thing. So that's not too much to ask, I don't think. And depending on your level in the industry, you can even ask for money up front if you have the experience and you're bringing something that valuable to the table. It's a shame that we even have to have these kind of conversations, because there's no place for artists to turn. Like the job I did was so small that I can't even, like, hiring a lawyer I'd be losing money. It's one of those things where if there was a collection, and I had this conversation, I don't remember who it was with, but I was like, if there was a collection agency for creative individuals, and I've since found out that there are in Los Angeles, that would kind of specialize in our industry a little bit, and they would basically do the hounding for you. If you have a delinquent client, and you know, they would maybe take 10% and try to go get you paid, and they only get paid if you get paid, then I would totally do that. If I had the choice of not getting paid ever for this little job, or maybe losing a couple $100, but still eventually going to get paid, I'm doing it. I'm going to call these people up, sign up, dude, go hound them. You know,
and the idea behind the video too is to basically not get to that point as much as possible.
Exactly.
Because, you know, he even says, you know, what if you write like a really sad kind of letter? Mm-hmm. And he's like, what if you appeal to their emotions and say, hey, you know, I did this thing for you guys and I really put a lot of work into it, and, you know, I kind of expected you guys. And he's like, dude, as soon as you do that, you have lost all of your power, not even just as a negotiator, but like all future negotiations at all with that client. It's like, that's just not how business is ever done. The contractor, for your analogy, never like has his hat in his hand walking up to the door and saying like, okay, I guess now is when you pay me.
I know.
It's always all scheduled out. So one thing is always have a contract, and you can actually go get this stuff not very expensively. You can go to things like LegalZoom and stuff like that. They actually have pre-made contracts for not a lot of money that you can fill in and at least get to a point where you say, here's what we agree that the project's going to be. Here's how many revisions you get. That was a big important part that I needed to learn, was here's the schedule. Here's how many revisions you get. Here's the end goal. Here's how long it's going to take. And here's my hourly rate or project rate. And this is what it's going to be. So now that it's spelled, and this is when you're going to pay. You're going to pay me 30, 40, 50% now and 50% on completion, or however you want to divvy it up. The point is that if anything changes on your end too, you now have a piece of paper to go to and say, we need to revise this piece of paper before we move forward. Mm-hmm. Because the scope of the project changed, or the revision amount changed. That was a huge one I learned from Colin, which was like, you want another revision? Not a big deal. Those tend to run about, you know, this many people times this much per hour. We're so happy to do this revision for you. Let me get the contract all settled and we'll get it to you, and you can pay for the revision. And very quickly, you're going to find that client either goes, that wasn't exactly what I had in mind with the revision. The revision that they had in mind was, hey, just change this one little thing for free and we'll be done. And
it's amazing how revisions kind of just magically disappear when they find out that they're being charged for it.
Yeah.
And that's why it's so important to have that.
Oh my God. Yes, dude. Like, I can't stress that enough. Like, it's the answer, you're right, Nick, is always, it's always yes, but it's always, you know, hey, we want to change this thing. And in your head, if you're an artist and somebody's like, you know, we want to change the fundamental part of what you're doing. In your head, you're like, oh my God, they just like, oh my, what? This is going to take me forever. And then you have to like turn that off and be like, oh yeah, we can totally do that. You know, that would actually be, that'd be cool. Let me just like run back and talk to the team and see how long it'll take to actually accomplish that. And we'll send you a bid or we'll send you some numbers. And the soon, like you said, as soon as they know that that actually isn't part of the deal, then you'll find that revisions come fewer and far between. You'll get more clear feedback from your clients because they know that they're on the clock and they can't just experiment. And that if you set those terms early, that's really the only time you can do it. You can't set those terms later. It just doesn't work. Yep. You got to set them right in the beginning. There was some other point I was going to make. Oh, man. Yeah, what was it?
Those lessons, though, I think that covers most of it, is be clear on the terms. And I like the whole like yes and or yes but idea, because you're totally right. That if you're in the service industry, that think of any other service industry. If they go, can you add this? If you're asking somebody to make a custom cake and you're like, I got this crazy idea. It's going to do this and there's going to be a chairlift going up the side of it. It's going to be a mountain. And there's going to be skiers going. And you're like, yeah, dude, this is awesome. Let me write all this down.
Yep.
And they're asking for, and then there's this. And they're, sweet. Dude, this sounds awesome. All right, let me get you a bid on that. And you go back and you say, they want this crazy cake and it's going to cost this much money. And if they come back later and say, we need to add another chairlift, you go, cool. Dude, we already know what a chairlift costs. It's actually $50 plus the labor to put it on, plus the frosting, blah, blah, blah. Here you go. $100 more. You can get another chairlift. No problem. And you have that all in your head to say, here's what happens. And then revisions were the heartbreaking thing for me that has the same feedback. Yep, no problem. Something that you could always do is say, hey, this is the last time to make changes. You could actually say that in an email when you go set up that call with your client. And say, hey, we're on our last thing to make changes. So if you have any last minute changes, now's the time. Like,
right.
You know, and let me know now, because after this next cycle of revision, this is what you get. And you don't have to make it a big deal. You don't have to make it like scary. You just have to say, it's about communicating where you are in the project.
Yep, exactly.
Being clear on both sides.
Yeah, I think that, you know, that it's really important for artists and freelancers to understand that it's really easily, we all get really emotionally invested in the work that we do. That's part of why we do what we do. We love it so much and we end up putting a lot of ourselves into our work. And I used to deal with this with my artists that would work on my team. They would get frustrated with client changes because sometimes they were just stupid. And it was my job as a creative director to try to steer the client into making the correct decisions or maybe talk them out of bad decisions. But sometimes they just want what they want. And it's hard when you're an artist kind of separated from the client via a producer or a CD to look at changes that come down the pipeline as anything but a pain in your ass that go against something maybe that you even thought was right. But it's kind of the CD's job to kind of communicate with the artist and say, hey, listen, you know what? I know this change is weird and the client really just wants to see it. Let's just do our best to get it out into their hands as soon as possible so we can move on to the next thing or whatever. But it is hard because you've got people that they make their living investing emotionally into a project, putting everything they can into it. And then it's, I don't know where I'm going with this, but it's a difficult balance, I guess. And I just want to say, I feel you, all you artists out there who have dealt with that. And I've had to do changes on jobs that are ridiculous, but trust me, the company is benefiting. Hopefully, if they're not, then they're not doing it right. They're benefiting from revisions.
Yeah.
And hopefully you will benefit eventually from those revisions. If not, then go work somewhere else. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, so many of this stuff is always interesting because I think of them, some of the stuff is like mental games. Like as an artist, if you put yourself in the right headspace, you could be like, oh, every client I work for, I'm going to do, you know, we're going to have the first pass and then there's going to be revision one and there's going to be revision two. And if you kind of put yourself where it's like, oh, we're in the first pass and it's almost done and I really like it. And then suddenly there's a change and now you're upset because something changed. But if you're in the headspace of like, no, there's going to be a revision. There's going to be a revision too. Then now when the client doesn't have a revision, it's instead of this being surprising that they do have one, it can be a relief that there is not one this time. Mm-hmm. So, it, you know, you could be upset at changes, or you could be happy when there aren't changes.
It's just exactly. And that's totally, and you just totally made me think of something that this is a point that I want to make. And I think it's, I want everybody to listen to this point because it helped me a tremendous amount when I was in production. Think of your jobs as a marathon and not a sprint. Think of your jobs as a marathon, not a sprint. We've all done the job where we get excited in the beginning, where we get stoked and we start to go further than maybe the milestone we were supposed to hit because we're having so much fun and it's looking so cool. And all of a sudden you're investing all this time and energy into it. Then you show the first round to the client and the client craps all over it, right? That's happened to everybody. Now all of a sudden you're completely down on the job. You hate the job. You don't even want to work on the job and you're just depressed. Because you thought of it as a sprint and not a marathon. If you had thought about it as a marathon and said to yourself, I'm going to save my energy. I'm going to try to extend my creative interest to the beginning, from the beginning to the end at the same level, you're going to be happier and you're going to do better work. So think of your, that's my advice, I guess, in this podcast.
That's a much better way of saying what I said.
Yeah, it's when you get, but you're right though, Chris, that's what kind of made me think of it. It's like you start to think, change your mindset and you'll be like, okay, this is not a sprint. Unless it is a sprint and it's like a quickie job or a pitch or something, then go for it. Sprint all day. But like if in the film industry, I imagine that people out there have to kind of do this or they go crazy working on the same shot for months. But you just have to kind of, and it's hard, man. It is not an easy thing to do. If you're like me, you just get excited and you want to like jump into it. It's really hard to not want to make it a sprint. But unfortunately, you have to, the longer you're in the industry, you realize that curveballs come, they always come at the worst times. And you Yep. just have to kind of, you have to think about it like, okay, my first milestone is this. This material or this lighting or this rigging is looking so cool. I almost want to just like keep going and like maybe show them a little bit more on this first pass. I mean, if you feel like that's the right thing to do, go for it. But just remember, they could not like it and you're going to have to deal with the emotional repercussions of that.
It's almost a training, and Chris, you said it perfect with a mindset, but it's almost training that you have to give yourself early on so that you don't do it in front of clients, right? It's like practicing for a speech or anything else professionally that you want to do. You're going to practice it behind the scenes before you do it publicly. So the first time you negotiate and talk about money and the first time you bend on what your creative vision is versus what somebody else's creative vision is shouldn't be when there's actual money on the line. You should be getting these skills early on. So things you could do, for example, is do a project for a friend, but have them be 100% creative control, right? So take your family bakery or some local business or something fun that you can go do for someone, or even a little bit of money if you want, just something on the line. You can actually go and say, I'm going to make what you want. Now, you still can say that's impossible. We can't make Terminator 4 for your commercial. But you do want somebody else to give you critical feedback early on to say, I don't like the way that that looks. And this is why early on, if you can get that thick skin, either through schooling, this is where school was very helpful for me. One of the few things that school was super helpful for was really critical feedback. And being able to separate myself from my work was a huge part of that, mm-hmm. that I wasn't my work. It was just something I did. Learning those lessons is really big. And I feel like traditional artists are a little bit better at this than, or not traditional artists, more like, you know, magazine and
commercial and artists.
Commercial artists that have been doing it a while have this thick skin where if you just make stuff that you like all day and now are confronted with feedback from someone else, this might be the first time that anybody has ever looked at your work and said, I don't like that. And the earliest that you can start to get that feedback, the better you're going to be able to take that feedback and say, hey, no problem. Let me change that for you and let me charge you for that. Instead of feeling guilty and bad about it, which most artists will feel, and now feel like apologetic that you're changing what you're making, right? And it's a real subtle shift, but it is about mindset. So other things you could do, negotiate things right now, no matter where you are in your career. Learn how to talk about money without feeling
gross,
guilty and gross about it, because everything is negotiable. They talk about this a lot, even just like getting a cup of coffee, or if you buy a car or lease anything or have rent on your apartment or anything.
You can negotiate coffee? How does that work?
Ask them. And
I'll give you 5 cents.
It's just a simple way of getting out of that stress. It's not that they have to agree to it, but by asking and having that uncomfortable, slightly uncomfortable conversation, and them going, we really don't have a button to give you a discount. That is such a hard thing to do, just mentally, that if you go do that, you're actually going to strengthen that muscle and not be as squeamish to talk about money. And I embarrass my wife all the time, but I do it at like thrift stores all the time. And just as a way to experiment, say, hey, these three things say $30, but how about we get them all for $25? And it's not to save the $5.
My wife would be mortified.
Yeah, no, yeah, mine is too. But it's, again, I don't do it to save the $5. I do it to strengthen that muscle, because talking about money is hard, and it's a skill that if you want to be a freelancer, you have to start to learn how to do this. This mm-hmm. is why a lot of people don't go freelance, or they go for a short amount of time and then go back to work at a big company, because
the comfort of a company, yeah.
They take care of all that. I mean, these are the things that a producer takes care of that I loved when I worked with good producers.
Oh,
they
yeah.
took care of all that BS.
Oh yeah. And they show so I get, that was a, that's a, that's another good point, I think, for all the artists out there that work at a studio that are sheltered from all of that kind of back and forth. I used to have to do that back and forth with the producer and the client, and I sheltered my team as much as I could from that stuff, because number one, they don't have a voice in that arena, so to kind of bring them too far into that would only frustrate them. So I do think it's important to appreciate good producers. So hats off to good producers.
Hats off.
Oh yeah, I don't want to think about that. It's like just doing that and being a producer, that's definitely not my personality type.
I've worked with some really good ones, thank God.
Something tangentially related, and I think it'd be an interesting thing to discuss is how would you guys go about, you know, let's just say you were doing some freelance, you know, like I did a bunch of freelance for a while, and how do you go about learning like what your hourly rate should be, or even charging per project? But I'll throw mine mm-hmm. out there. What I did, and it seemed to work pretty well for me, is, you know, I run some of the motion graphics meetups, so I knew other people in the industry and whatnot, and I had somebody who wanted me to do a project, and I didn't know what to charge per hour. So I contacted a couple of people I know, and I was like, hey, you know, generally, what do you tend to charge per hour? And then kind of judge what you think, you know, I guess your skill is versus other people, because maybe there's somebody amazing and you're like, they could probably get done twice as fast as me, so they're twice as valuable. So I'm going to cut my rate in half. Or maybe you're like, yeah, I'm a little faster, so I'm going to take their number and do 10% higher. And that gave me a baseline, because it's like what's the proper rate here? Like 25 an hour or 200 an hour? It was like I was in that kind of range. Like, I don't know what's acceptable here. And so you're just in this void of like, I don't know what to charge. And you can mm-hmm. do it the slow way, which is keep doing more jobs and keep increasing your price until somebody says, no, that's too much. And then you pull it back a little bit. But I definitely found talking to some peers who are doing it and then kind of, you know, gauging off of that has worked well when I was doing some more freelance.
I've hired so many freelancers in Chicago that I think that you, like, I could tell you, if I looked at somebody's work as a freelancer, I could tell you probably within $100, $50 what their day rate was, or even, and then I would have an opinion on what it should be. But it varies from city to city. I mean, people's day rates in LA and New York are much higher. obviously, then Chicago. And then based on whether fact you're like just an After Effects animator, there's your day rates are kind of be like between 350 to 600, depending on your skill level. 3D artists can generally be anywhere from 350 to 900, depending on the specialty and the skill level. And then, you know, a compositor like a Nuke or Fusion, they can be anywhere from, they tend to be higher end, like anywhere from 500 to 950, even to 1200, depending on how good they are. So it varies by skills, by software, you know, all these things kind of weigh into it.
Sure, sure. Well, and it's great even hearing some numbers there, but like you're saying, that depends on your skill, and that's Chicago, and that is what it sounds like at the very tail end here of 2016. So how would you recommend that some freelancer, and, you know, let's say just some freelancer in somewhere else or in Florida or something, what would be a good method for them going about finding out how much they should be worth? Like how should they approach it?
Well, I have different rates for different things in different areas too. So kind of do the research and say, okay, well, I'm getting a lot of work from New York, so I need to figure out what my rate's going to be for New York. And if I'm working remotely, I have to figure in, and this is another good point. I don't mean for us to go on a tangent because I think this is a great topic. But one thing that I wish people would talk about that they don't talk about is equipment costs, because we're seeing so many freelancers working remotely being asked by both studios and agencies to work from home. They incur their own equipment costs that used to be part of the studio's cost. So you have to pad your rate to cover that.
And software.
Software too. Thank you. And like figure out what do you want to, like, because listen, you know, when I was at DK, we'd pay, you know, $500 a day or whatever the rate was for the freelancer to come in and work on our computers and our software. So they were getting money, and probably if they weren't from Chicago, being put up in a hotel. So take all of that into account too. So if you're in Florida and you want to work in New York, they're not going to put you up. Okay. So you're going to work remotely. So find out what, let's just say that it's a 3D modeling job. And so ask around on some forums, or maybe hopefully you know some people in New York, and say, hey, listen, I'm doing this freelance modeling thing for this company. What do you think a good rate would be? Okay, well, that's a good rate. Okay, I like that rate. Let's say it's $750 a day. And you look at that number and you say, okay, that works for me, because it's a little bit more than I would charge normally for a normal Florida client, because that's where I live. But that's okay, because I have my equipment cost and they're New York. They're used to paying that. That's probably okay. So I'm going to do that. So that's kind of how I would approach it. There's no chart. There's no magic Excel thing. You just kind of have to put the research in and find out what the average cost is for that particular skill set, what you're doing. And then if you're working from home, and let's say you have your own cut of Nuke, that's $10,000 right there that you have to pay for that. So it should be part of right. That should be part of your rate.
Yeah, all this it's so different how many things are into play, because you not only have to price it properly for that job, but also not so high that maybe they're okay with this job, but they're not going to hire you next time because you were not quite as good as they thought you were because you charged so much. But if you charge a little bit less, maybe you'd get the call the next time. There's so many weird little details on this where you don't want to under and you don't want to over. But I think Chris had it almost perfect with the two things that he said, which is ask somebody in a similar position if you can to say what would they charge, and then base it on what you are doing and what your skill level is compared to them, and do a best guess. And then the other one is, if they say yes too quickly, you might be charging too, like, not enough.
So yeah, if you have a happy client there, if they're like, oh, that's great, well, you're like, oh, dang it, I should have asked.
Yeah, come
for
on
more.
In forever. There's Just a, work for us.
I got a trick, though, that I learned from working at studios for so long and doing bids. The power of the discount. And so what that means is you say, okay, cool, I'll work at, you know, you get a feeling like, well, I this is a client that I bet's probably not going to be able to pay me my top rate. Right. But I know I can get the job and probably do a lot more work with them if I work at this rate. So what you do is you say, I'm willing to work at a discounted rate, and you lay that out. I'm going to give you a 25% discount on my day rate. So what that does is it gives you the power to at any point say, well, okay, cool, but I can't work at the discounted rate anymore. And it gives you that little negotiation lever to pull whenever you need to. And it also lets them know what you think you're worth. And I think that's important in itself, just to be like, well, I really want to do this job. Let's say it's, you know, doing concepts for some movie or something, and you really want that on your reel. You really want that, you know, on your site, whatever. You could say, yeah, cool, I'll do it. And they say, well, can you do it for $250 a day? And that's like way lower than what you would normally do. So you say, okay, I'll do it. I'm going to make sure I write, I'm discounting you by, you know, 80% or whatever it is. So that way they at least don't think that you're the $250 a day guy or whatever. But
yeah, that seems like a way you can do both and still get in at the right price for them, but also telegraph what you think you're worth. And I've even seen that as advice to do for free jobs as well, which is just telegraph, yes, this is a free job. However, this I'm giving you 100% discount, and just send them the bill and say, here, you owe nothing. Yeah, like you guys get bills all the time for zero. It's part of the contract, or you got a free month or whatever it is. Send the bill. You don't owe anything. Here's what it would have cost. Here's the we got to work on something cool discount. And when the real job comes, or what I mean by real job is maybe the job you don't necessarily love, but you need to pay the bills, you actually have that number to go back to and say, all right, we all agree this is not the like build our real job. This is where my real day rate comes in.
Yeah, and there's so many good reasons to do that kind of thing. You're establishing the expectations properly for them. And now, and even that, like people do jobs for exposure, but and maybe it's like, okay, I want for this client because they know everybody in the city. Well, now they're telling everybody in the city that you do work for, you know, 10% of what everybody else does. This is not the kind of advertising that you want.
No.
So they need to appreciate. And I've had friends do this where, you know, it's like little side projects, but they're always super generous. It's like, okay, side project, I'm doing it for free, no problem. But you want people to understand the amount of effort you put into this. You need some sort of like, they need to know how big of a favor you did them. And if you go, oh, no problem, like, I'll just whip it out. It doesn't, you know, don't worry about it. And it's like, and then they go and spend their entire weekend doing it. Like, they should know. They should know you spent your entire weekend doing it or whatever the case is. Like, you know, otherwise you just did this in a vacuum and a void, and it can't ever mean anything good for you.
No, so. I mean, everything that we're talking about is a dance. It's an art form. It's something that they don't teach in schools. You just hopefully you talk to people that have done it a while, and you kind of pick things up here and there, and you listen and you apply some of this knowledge. But it's all really valuable. It's as valuable to your career as learning how to create a mask in After Effects. You know what I mean? Like it's that type of thing that they just don't. I think the reason they don't teach it in schools is because it changes a lot, changes very quickly. It's also very difficult to for teachers to even stay on top of that if they're not in production and they're not the ones that have
they're
ever
not qualified,
maybe working or have. I created schedules. I worked with producers, hired freelancers, put together these teams, and it really should be a class because it's like this whole other world that I feel like people should know about. And I've met artists that are so good and charge so little that I'll be like, I don't feel comfortable paying you this little. Like, this is not like,
yeah, I had some early freelance gigs where I clearly asked so little money that the client offered me more. That definitely tells you you're way off the mark here. If the client is embarrassed at how little they're paying you, then you are like, that they were expecting a zero on the price you gave them, another zero on the end of it.
Well, another tactic too is to bid yourself out. I call it bidding yourself out of a job. And what that is when you get something across your desk that you're not particularly excited about, and you don't necessarily need the money or need the job, and it's there on your desk, and it's a competitive bid maybe. So what you do is you basically come in a little bit, like, this is not necessarily, you don't want to do this with your day rate, because if you fluctuate your day rate too much, producers will notice that and they will not trust you. So be careful of that. I'm talking more of like a project-based thing. You can bid yourself out of the project by just, you know, doing everything at book rate, like doing everything for the full cost, no discount, and what it would really cost. And it's probably going to be pretty expensive. So that way, what happens, you're not saying no, you're not necessarily saying yes, because you're giving them a bid that's not disingenuous. It's not in any way fake or fraudulent. It's exactly what it would cost to do the job. You're not discounting or anything, and it's probably going to be pretty expensive. What that's going to do is it'll probably put you in a position where either you'll get the job and you'll be paid really well for it, or they'll pass on you and go to somebody that's discounting. So it's kind of in that situation when you don't need the work, it can be a win-win.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Well, you see what you can get away with, and then if they say yes, you go, "Holy cow, this is amazing."
Well, you can't do that. I mean, that's a gray area too, because, I mean, you just got to be cool and ethical and accountable for the numbers that you put in front of them. Like, you can't, you know, let's say somebody wants to make, I don't know, a coffee, just because coffee's on my mind right now, coffee commercial, and you're like, I don't know, $800,000. And then be like, okay, great. Can you send me that bid of where all that money is and like what that's going to? Because that sounds a little high and we just want to see how that breaks down. And then you're like,
well, you know, I totally get what you mean. I guess I'm coming at this more from if you're a young freelancer and you don't know how to do this, people could be not knowing how to price themselves at all.
Yeah,
and so this is a chance to, like, you know what? Maybe I'm underbidding these things like too much. Like, I'm pretty busy. I don't have to worry about money for, you know, the next couple of months for this third project that's coming in. Why don't I crank this up a bit and then see if they blink an eye?
I mean, that's totally fair. You could totally do that. Just be ready to be accountable. Just be ready to be accountable for that. And they might call you out and say, well, you came in 25% higher than everybody else we talked to. Either you're that good or you're doing something different.
Yeah, can totally. You tell us? But you're an expert here, effectively, because you've done so many of these projects. You probably have a very good idea of the pricing in your mind. So I'm more talking to the person who just doesn't know what the price is.
I would say those people should talk to somebody. You know, like, if you're not sure, talk to someone, because that would suck if you... Again, this is like a bullseye scenario. Like, you could be way off the mark, but if you just had a little bit of information, you could be closer to that bullseye. And all it is like finding the right person to talk to and say, hey, listen, I'm bidding this project. It's particles. I've never done particles. How hard do you think it's going to be to learn? How many hours do you think? How many changes do you think they'll have? And you know, like, everybody should have... This is getting deeper now, but everybody should have that mentor that they can go to, hopefully, in their career, that they can ask these questions to and get an honest answer from. But yeah, man, it's hard. It's hard to navigate this stuff.
I'm thinking back to that part of my career, Chris, when I had no idea. And it was exactly reaching out and asking. It was in Chicago, and they said, can you help with this project? I think it was working in-house at, might have been DK was the first one, or it might have been Avenue Edit, but they were like, can you come help with these boards? Or in the other case, it was like a little stinger animation. And I had no idea. And it was exactly just asking other freelancers that I looked up to, that I met. Like, this all goes back to stuff I say all the time, is like, go meet other people in the industry. If you have an interest to do this for a living, you have to go meet these other people, either in real space or online. But you have to be able to reach to someone and say, hey, do you mind telling me like roughly what you charge? Because I kind of see us similar, or I kind of see you as, you know, a year ahead of me, and I could charge a little bit less or whatever.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't have to be a competition, and it doesn't have to be tell me how much you get paid. But I think you're right. It's like that mentor idea. And it just all comes down to this idea that you have to treat yourself like a business. If you want to be a freelancer, or even an employee, there's an element of selling yourself that you have to be comfortable with. if you're in a service industry. Yeah. That's, you are selling yourself, and you have to be comfortable with that. You're not just selling the final image, because the final image doesn't just appear. It's a whole set of communication, and it's a whole dance, like Chad says. It's all the agreement on how much and how many revisions and what the process is and how long you've been doing it, how long they've been doing it. There's so many. This is why this information is so hard to find, because there are so dang many levers to pull. So the closest you can get to the source of, okay, this other particle job that just happened, I just so happened to have met somebody that did a similar job a year ago. I'm going to go ask them, like, roughly what I should charge. Or, or if you really trust them, just tell them. Say, hey, you're in the industry. What would you charge? Like, what would you give me money for?
Yeah.
And and how much?
Well, yeah. And what you're, you know, all I guess we're saying here is, like, the more context you can give yourself, like, the better, you know, you're just, you know, firing off into the void and you don't know, you know, and the more you know kind of where the industry's at, the more you know where your skills are at compared to other things. On my first real job, I got hired at, like, it was an entry-level position. I got hired at entry-level wages. And when a yearly review came around and I got, you know, a certain percentage increase, it was nowhere near what I was hoping for. And so I talked to the management. I said, listen, like, I know this, I came in here as an entry level job, but I clearly have far above entry level skills. And I, you know, I got it multiplied, you know, it was like six times higher than what they had initially given me.
So you said, F you, pay me.
Yeah. And they didn't bat an eye at it. So,
well, no. And any business, you know, that wants to stay in business won't, because it's expensive to replace people. It is really, really hard, especially people that you've brought up, maybe from an entry level position. So that a person that starts at an entry level and works their way up through a facility is really valuable, not because they're the most talented person that's ever walked on the floor, but they know everything, every little nuance about that business because they've been there so long. They've put in the time. Those are valuable people. Those are hard to replace. But yeah, that gets into a whole other concept of salary negotiations. That's also very difficult for people, to kind of understand how to make that work for them. And that's a whole other,
it's a big topic.
Whole other podcast. Definitely want to talk more about this stuff. I think it is one of those unspoken about things that also sometimes is not as fun either, right? This is all the stuff we have to do in order to get to the stuff that we want to do. It's almost like, you know, paying the bills. I mean, it's literally like paying the bills, right? It's
quite literally.
So yeah, I think we should definitely talk more about that. That's a good one, Chad. I'm going to add a salary negotiations to the topics list. And if you guys out there have a question along this line that we're not quite hitting, or have a specific question about, other than how much should I charge? Because again, that's an impossible question to answer. We just give you some guidelines. But if you do have a question, drop it in the comments. We're looking for more topics like this too. I think this stuff is super helpful. I mean, man, how do you decide well, I think there's two groups. There's a group that hears numbers like this and go, holy moly, I had no idea. I remember hearing that people got $600 a day to do After Effects. I'm like, are you serious right now? That's a real number?
Mm-hmm.
And you have to understand the context of how all this stuff fits together. And it's, again, it's just talking comfortably about money and the language
right.
and what it means is not a thing you do all day. If you're making daily renders, which you should still be making daily renders, but in between making daily renders, you have to go learn about some of these things and at least go have a conversation about it with somebody in the business and say, how in the heck did you
figure
this out?
When I talked at some school at one point, and I said, you know, do you guys have any idea how much money you could make in this industry? And none of them really had that much of a clue. And I was like, well, just to give you an idea, we pay people anywhere from $350 to $800 a day based on their skill level, software, yada, yada. And their mouths were like, even the teacher was like trying to, I think, give me his card for freelance work at that point.
But let's be clear. Let's be really clear too, because I don't want to get anybody excited about, like, I'm going to watch some tutorials and go get paid $600 a day. The the quality of work that you're expected to do at that level and the broadness of the type of work that you're able to. Basically, they want to put a board in front of you and have you go, I can figure that out.
Yeah.
Comfortably.
Yeah, right? Absolutely. Like, we're not so talking, this is, I by no means want to make this sound like it's a get rich quick thing. I'm going to go, you know, I know After Effects, I'm going to go make $600 a day. That will not happen. You will get fired off a job if you do not know what you are doing. And it'll be really apparent after the, and if you're like us and you live in Chicago, it's a small town. Word will travel fast. Word you are only as around. Good as the last job you did. So you don't want to, you know, walk in someplace, say that you're the best thing ever and charge $600 a day, sit down and not be able to execute. So I'm just saying that if you dedicate time and energy and you have the talent and the skill, this is what you could be making. Now, the trade-off, this is a totally, let's even write this down as another thing. The freelance versus staff, kind of,
I think we should take that into another.
That's what I'm saying. Like, this is like this is another topic, like freelance versus staff, pros, cons, because that's a whole other story.
It's on the list now.
Because I've seen both sides. I'm sure you guys have too. And there's definitely pluses and minuses.
Well, I think we should. I wrote salary versus staff. I'm sure we know what that means, but salary freelance.
I mean, I don't get paid and I don't work there.
I think we should save those because we're coming up on an hour. I think overall, though, as we wrap up, it sounds like it comes down to understanding where you are in your skill level and where you are in your comfortableness of talking about this stuff. So it's almost, it's back to self-awareness, which is a huge part of it. If you know your skill level, then you can actually more accurately judge where you are versus other people. Because if you say, oh yeah, I can make whatever, but you've never come across a project that where a client told you what to do and you've only been making stuff that came out of your brain, this is a very different set of skills, right? So if you, as much as I say, like go do the daily render stuff, which I love, a lot of those daily renders are, looks good to me, looks good to me, looks good to me, looks good to me, render, 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 render. And at a certain point, if you're going to get paid, there has to be the other side of it, which is, this looks good to me, client hates it, they want something else, they don't know how to describe what they want.
Yep.
Where do we go from here? And that is the skill level that really does pay, is to be able to look at or hear what a client wants and get to the bottom of it and to be able to produce it on time, on budget, with the software that you have. Like, this is where all that other stuff really comes into play. And I'm excited to talk more about this stuff. This is good.
Yeah, I think that the day rate, and I'm just going to end with this. That day rate and any of these day rates that we've mentioned is not purely for knowing the software, because anybody can know where the software is, what it does. This button does that. This button does this. It's like, and I'm just basically regurgitating what you just said, Nick. It's your ability to decipher and add something to the process. And that's what they pay for. They're not paying for somebody that knows software, because that's silly. They're paying for your ability to interpret notes, boards, whatever, into amazing things that people want to watch. And so don't think that it's just, oh, I know After Effects, I'm going to go off and get this money. It's much more than that.
Yeah, and those are the harder things to learn, really. And again, I know I used to talk more about it, and I'm actually excited to do more of this, talk about the design side, talk about the money side, talk about how to get your first job, how to get a promotion, right? We have a lot of these things written down. So that's exciting. That's good. Any last minute tips here, Chris?
My last note here is going to be, and we'll put in the show notes, there's a Twitter account that I like to follow, and it's For Exposure. And all they do is tweet out, they don't call out names or anything, but they just tweet out people being like, oh, like, you know, you're going to do this amazing work, it's going to do all these things, but there's no budget. And it's just all these different, like horrible proposals. It's all terrible stuff. So I'll put a link on that, because it's entertaining to see, like, you know, random ones.
The world is full of those people.
Here's the top one right now. Like, must have a proven track record and industry contacts. No pay. Like,
yeah, that's is, like, stay away from that.
Clients from Hell is another good one. I'll link up.
Oh my God!
Remember that?
Hovering. Oh, I don't know that one.
Still.
How about Hovering Art Directors?
Oh my gosh!
Have you seen those?
Yeah, this might be another podcast too. But that was the little bit more to the left. Can you go?
let me see your mouse for a second.
Little bit.
Oh my God. Okay, that's a different topic too.
Yeah, I have some stories about that as well. We'll save. But again, if you guys have topics, especially these kind of things, we'd love to talk about it. We've all had different experience in the industry, so this is kind of
I'd love to hear good to your hear experiences.
From, yeah,
people's.
Yeah, absolutely. So let us know in the comments, and I think we'll wrap this one up today. Thank you guys so much for stopping by, and again, hit us up in iTunes if you want to listen to us instead of watch us on YouTube. You could do that there, but if you're watching on YouTube, thank you for that too. Hi, this is for you. Like a wave. You don't get the wave on iTunes. But thank you guys so much for stopping by. Thank you, Chris. Thank you, Chad.
See you guys.
Bye.
Let's do it. Bye, everybody. Bye. Happy Monday.